around us, and which would be very exciting if we happen to observe one. So let me give a qualitative description of our calculations. Now, we imagine that there are fluctuations in the early universe. These are quantum fluctuations coming from inflation. These fluctuations have been seen in Kolbe and WMAP. These overdense regions, some regions of space are overdense, some are underdense. At horizon crossing, you may have an overdense region being engulfed now by the horizon. This region being overdense, and assuming that the universe is flat, this region of space will expand, and eventually will stop expanding because its value for its own value of omega is bigger than one. Stop expanding. At that point, one or two things can happen. Number one, this region of space could simply disperse because it's an unstable configuration, or the system of space could actually collapse into a black hole, and for that we have to have a condition. And the condition, of course, is the Jeans condition. So how do we classify these overdense regions? Well, number one, you specify them by when this overdense region crosses the horizon, particle horizon. And so for that, you give an energy density. What is the energy density of the universe? Average energy density of the universe at the point when this fluctuation crosses the horizon. Then you have to specify the overdensity at this point. And this overdensity is just a delta rho over rho. So the total energy density inside our region of space, which in principle or possibly could collapse to a black hole, its energy density is the average energy density of the universe at horizon crossing at that moment times 1 plus delta. And inside there is a temperature. Outside there is an average density of the universe at a different temperature. So to actually solve this problem, you would like to solve the equations of general relativity. The region of space is not necessarily spherical. It's going to have all sorts of different shapes. It could be shaped like a rod or spaghetti or some arbitrary shape, ellipsoid. But we will take a very simplistic point of view, follow an approach put forward by Cardall and Fuller, assume that this region of space is spherical. Because we do want to study a wide variety of equations of state, do a survey of different equations of state. If you really want to solve the problem using general relativity, it's a very time-consuming, computationally intensive problem. And only a few of such calculations have been done, and they certainly are not the type of calculation you want to use for an overall survey for an equation of state. We want to specify the region with the given overdensity at horizon crossing. We want to determine the turnaround point and the size of this region at turnaround. We want to apply the collapse condition and determine any resulting black hole mass spectrum. So first of all, the overall universe is flat. And so outside this overdense region, we have a flat FRW universe. We have a metric for that. Let's give it right there. Inside, we have an overdense region. So it's a closed Friedman-Robert Walker universe. And that's specified by a parameter kappa, which tells you how closed the universe is. The size of this overdense region then evolves according to this equation. I'm not sure there's a pointer here.
Hockey stick.
The hockey stick is the pointer. Right. I thought Jared brought that. Okay, so T refers to the time in the universe as a whole, and tau is the time in the overdense region. R is the scale factor in the universe as a whole, and S is the scale factor in our overdense region. So the size of this region evolves in this way, and if kappa was equal to zero, we would have a flat universe inside, but kappa is not equal to zero. It's positive, and that means that this region will eventually stop expanding. So how do we do a matching of the overdense region at horizon crossing? The natural way to do the matching is that you set the scale factors equal to each other, inside and outside, and you set the velocities equal to each other, inside and outside. And that gives you a relatively smooth and matching condition between the inside and the outside at horizon crossing. So we can then solve for kappa, and kappa is given in terms of then this is essentially kappa right here. It's given in terms of the average energy density of the universe at horizon crossing times the square of the scale factor at horizon crossing times the overdensity delta. So obviously kappa is proportional to delta. And we can determine when the region stops expanding, and the reason we'll the region will stop expanding. When the energy density times the scale factor squared is equal to this regionally determined quantity. And the asterisk just indicates that those are the values at turnaround, or when the region stops expanding. All right, so we can determine the particle horizon. Particle horizon at the turnaround, given by the asterisk, is just the ratio of the scale factors, turnaround divided by scale factor horizon crossing, times the lowercase r, calculate that. These are all standard calculations in cosmology. Then you want to apply the collapse condition. Will this overdense region collapse or not? Well, it depends. There's a Jeans criterion for that. And normally there's a Jeans criterion, there's a Jeans mass, and so on. And it's all, most of those calculations assume that the particles are moving non-relativistically. So you neglect pressure compared to energy density. Energy density is basically the mass density, and so on. But in our situation, in the very early universe, for these overdense regions, you need to have a relativistic description. And for that, you can just turn to Weinberg, and you can work out the Jeans wave number yourself. So this is a situation where you assume that there's no net baryon number, which is a pretty good approximation, since baryon number over entropy density is 10 to the minus 9. And so you just look at small fluctuations given by that expression, and that tells you for what wave numbers your fluctuations would be unstable to collapse. And so there's an expression for the relativistic Jeans number. That's given in terms of the speed of sound and in terms of the enthalpy density. So we evolve our overdense region up to a point where it stops expanding, and then we ask, will it collapse the black hole or not? And so we apply this Jeans condition, and if the particle horizon at this turnaround point is bigger than pi divided by the Jeans wave number, then we say, yes, then it will collapse. And you can calculate the critical value of delta for that, for a constant speed of sound. So if the speed of sound is constant, you calculate delta, critical value, that's given by this expression up here. And in particular, if the speed of sound squared is equal to 1/3, as it would be for radiation-dominated equation of state, critical value for delta is pi squared over 12, about 0.822. That's a rather large overdensity. However, it is approximately consistent with the results of Niemeyer and Jagamczyk, who got a critical value of delta of about 0.7 plus or minus 0.02. They actually solved the equations of general relativity for such an overdense region, but for that they did not assume that you just had a uniform density inside, but you have to assume at horizon crossing that you have some relatively smooth distribution in order to solve the equations. And so there are different distributions here, Gaussian and bottom of the wine barrel and so on. And so the actual critical value of the overdensity is slightly dependent on the exact shape of the overdense region. But then about 5 years later, a couple of other groups got smaller values for delta, approximately a half, about 0.45 plus or minus 0.02. And the reason is, they point out the reason is that they include only the growing mode from inflation and not the decaying mode. And this approximately halves the critical value for delta. So you can get a simple argument for that. And so therefore, if it turns out that if you take our value of 0.822 and you divide it by 2 just to try and phenomenologically match these two very different approaches, survey approach versus this very computational intense approach, you get 0.411, which we think is good enough agreement with these more sophisticated approaches. So now we have the machinery in place to do all of our calculations. Find the temperature, turn around, the size of the collapsing region, the Jeans length, apply the collapse condition. And we want to study various equations of state. So like I said at the beginning, we are theorists, and we can modify the equation of state as we see fit, as long as we don't violate any basic principles of physics. So we've done that. And a simple way to parameterize the equation of state is just to say that it's the entropy density of a massless, non-interacting bosonic gas times an effective number of degrees of freedom. And there are various numbers of ways that you can parameterize those effective numbers of degrees of freedom. The first way is just to make a sharp jump. Say that you have a certain number in the high temperature phase above the critical temperature, and a certain number in the lower temperature phase below the critical temperature. And that, in fact, is just what the MIT bag model does. On the other hand, you can have a first order phase transition which softens things up a little bit. You can have the number density depending on temperature. It approaches the upper limit number degrees of freedom in the quark phase, exponentially with a particular rate, particular width, and the same thing in the hadronic phase. And then finally, you can have a rapid crossover. This has been studied in the context of heavy ion collisions before. You just have a hyperbolic tangent. And so these different parameterizations are just shown in this video here. The difference with the previous talk is now, of course, we have the leptons and the neutrinos and the photons. Charged leptons, neutrinos, and photons, they have to be included in the equation of state. You can calculate the energy density in the usual way just by using thermodynamic identities. I'm sure everybody in the room knows how to do that. And the same thing with the pressure. So the pressure as a function of energy density looks in canonical fashion. You can solve then for the scale factor for the universe as a whole. So this is not making any reference to the Oberdin's region. This is just the overall expansion of the universe. And it's interesting to see how the temperature evolves as a function of the scale factor of the universe. So if you're well above the critical temperature, you're up here, all of those different equations of state give you the same result. You cool down, and if you have a MIT bag model equation of state, there's a very strong first order phase transition. You can have a softened first order phase transition, second order rapid crossover. But well above and well below, temperature as a function of the scale factor is identical. Of course, it has to be because entropy is conserved. And so if you look at the equation of state well above TC or well below TC, equation of state is the same. And therefore, the scale factor has to be the same for the different equations of state. Now, usually it's said entropy is essentially conserved. You can actually calculate how much entropy might be generated in the expansion of the universe. And it's much, much less than 1%. So it's usually said that if you go through a first or second order phase transition in the early universe, there are almost no observable consequences. How would you know? That's exactly the point we want to address. Softening of the equation of state, I think Edward was pointing this out many years ago in the context of heavy ion collisions, trying to find beam energy for colliding heavy nuclei, where you would encounter the softest point in the equation of state. Well, here's the softest point or range for these different equations of state. The MIT bag model, of course, the speed of sound squared is 1/3 in both the high and low temperature phases, and it's zero in the mixed phase. Well, it's zero in the sense that if the wavelength of your sound wave is bigger than the size of the bubbles or droplets making up the mixed phase, then the speed of sound is zero. But of course, if your sound wave has a very, very small wavelength, much smaller than the size of a bubble or a droplet, then you would have a speed of sound squared equal to 1/3 within that specific region of space. For the other equation of state, well, for the softened first order equation of state, there's a less of a late heat, so the square of the speed of sound is zero, just within a narrower range. With a second order phase transition to rapid crossover, it goes down quite a bit, but it actually never goes to zero. So, determine the critical deltas. Specify when the overdensity crosses the horizon, what is the overdensity, model the phase transition, determine the turnaround point, Jeans condition, etc. So here is one of the big punchlines. On the left is the bank model equation of state, and on the right is the softened first order equation of state. This is the critical value for overdensity. It's not divided by a factor of 2. If there was no phase transition at all, then the critical value would be pi squared for 12 or 0.822 all the way across. This is what it actually is. In this region, there is no collapse. Jeans condition is not satisfied. In this region, there is no collapse. Up here, there is a collapse because the region is too overdense. And in this long tail that actually extends out to infinity, there is collapse. So this is the critical value of overdensity at horizon crossing. And that's the energy density of the universe, average energy density of the universe at horizon crossing. So why is there this long tail? Well, the reason is that if the horizon crossing occurs within this tail, that region will expand. And at the point when it stops expanding, it will be in the mixed phase. And once it's in the mixed phase, speed of sound is zero, and there's nothing to prevent it from collapsing. So as long as the overdense region has an overdensity within this range, it will stop with expansion in the mixed phase, therefore it will lead to a collapse of a black hole. It's somewhat paradoxical if the overdensity was somewhat bigger, it does not lead to collapse. And the reason is that the overdense region will stop expanding before it reaches the mixed phase. And before it reaches the mixed phase, the speed of sound is still too big, and the Jeans criterion does not allow that region to collapse. So there's a very long tail here, and that is crucial for all of our conclusions. The universe enters the mixed phase at horizon crossing in this region right here. So that leads somewhat of a decrease in the critical value of delta, but the main thing is this long tail. First order phase transition that's softened compared to a bag model has the same long tail off infinity. Yes?
I guess I wasn't watching carefully enough. In your early part, when the thing is still expanding, were you including the effect of pressure there?
Because Oh, yes, of course.
Because I thought the usual wisdom is that when you're in a relativistic system like this with large pressure, that overdensities don't actually, delta doesn't actually rise for overdensity sublogarithmic.
No, we use the full equation instead. And so if it's, so inside the overdense region, there is a temperature, and therefore an equation of state. And it just so happens that that region of space has an energy density somewhat bigger than the average of the universe. So there's no reason not to use an equation of state in that region.
Right, but why doesn't the overdense region just represent two traveling sound waves?
If you really, I mean, this is the canonical approach. If you want to do any better than this, you really have to look at the full fluctuations of energy density distribution, wave numbers, and so on from the early universe, rather than saying that we are assuming that our overdense regions are spherical. All right, and that makes the problem tractable.
Even your traveling waves, he said, speed of sound goes to zero. So even if they were made out of two waves, they still.
Right, but in the period before the speed of sound goes to zero, it prevents the overdensity from becoming large, and you don't have a collapse, which is not in that zero speed sound time for long.
The two things would coincide.
Yeah. So if we find interesting results, then all of these other subtleties and more sophistications should be built in. If you look at higher order transitions, on the left there's a second order, and on the right there's just a rapid crossover. There's a vestige of that tail, but it doesn't go off to infinity. And of course, it doesn't go off to infinity because there is no mixed phase. Second order phase transition, the speed of sound becomes very small, but it never drops to zero. And the rapid crossover is very similar to that. Okay, so I think I've more or less summarized this. We get the greatest reduction in delta when the overdensity happens with a particular range of delta, such that when this overdense region stops expanding, it stops expanding in the mixed phase, and then boom, we've got the collapse. What about the spectrum of perturbations? Well, the spectrum of perturbations are normally parameterized as a power law, so it goes like a to the n. People have looked at this and they said, if you really want to look at the probability that you have a spherical distribution, which is overdensed by a certain amount, it's very well represented by a Gaussian. And this Gaussian it's a Gaussian in the overdensity delta. Delta could be positive, delta could be negative. It has a width, and the width depends on the energy density, or equivalently depends on the horizon mass at horizon crossing. And this is parameterized in terms of the spectral index n. And the normalization is given by the COBE data. So that was already known back in the late 1990s. Okay, now the limits from inflation say that this index n should be less than 1.3, 1.25. Latest WMAP data says it's probably in the range of 1, give or take some few percent, 5%. However, the WMAP and COBE data actually measure physical length scales that are much, much bigger than the ones that we're looking at here. So in principle, this could have no relevance at all for the calculations that we're doing. But it's the best you can do. And if inflation is really a correct theory of the early universe, then this extrapolation down to much smaller length scales would not be so bad. All right, the next thing we want to do is we have to integrate over the history of the early universe. So there are a number of factors here. If you want to know the present density of these black holes, okay, let's start way over on the right. First of all, you have a Gaussian distribution for probability that you have an overdensity delta. And then you want to integrate over all those overdensities. You integrate over those values of delta, which will lead to collapse eventually. So that was the range that I showed you in the previous slide. You have a density factor. You have one such collapse per horizon. You have a horizon crossing rate, which is just the logarithmic time derivative of the volume of the horizon, particle horizon. Then you have to dilute these things, because once you make a black hole, they will no longer expand, and the number density decreases just like non-relativistic massive particle decreases. So you have a dilution factor, R being the scale factor at the time of formation divided by the scale factor at the present time, and that's cubed. And then you integrate over all time up to the present time. If you want to know the mass density, the number density of black holes as a function of their mass, then you just insert a delta function. And then you ask your graduate student to do some calculations. So this gives, first of all, for a particular equation state vague model, it gives the mass at collapse. And the mass of the black hole is the mass at collapse when the system is not expanding, when it's stopped. That's the proper way to determine the mass of the resulting black hole. So that's the collapse mass in units of the solar mass as a function of horizon mass in units of the solar mass. And for a vague model equation of state, you get, again, this long tail. That's a consequence of the delta having a long tail. And the nice thing about far points is you can go through with different equations of state and compare them. So there's a first order phase transition softened. So it looks very much like the vague model, but it's softened. As you can see, corners are rounded off. Second order phase transition, tail gets shorter and shorter. Rapid crossover. If you had a fixed speed of sound, there would be no such S-shape at all. All right. Now, there's another effect that we have not taken into account so far, and that is you can form a black hole, and this black hole ultimately finds itself inside another overdense region. And so within your big overdense region, you could have another black hole or two or three black holes. So you want to take into account this overcounting. And so that's very much like multiple scattering problem. So you can take that into account by saying, this is the number density mass spectrum to be calculated according to the formula I showed you earlier. This would be the net number. That's what you actually observe. And what you actually observe is going to be smaller because you could have black holes finding themselves inside collapsing regions. And so there's a suppression factor. You can write as exponential of minus S. And S, you can calculate the formula looks very much like the one that I showed you earlier. And this suppression factor may or may not be important depending on equation of state and so on and so forth. So let me show you the mass distribution. This is for the bag model. This is log to the base 10, dndm, in units of 1 per cubic kilometer, and in units of mass of the sun. It covers 110 orders of magnitude. It's plotted as a function of the mass of the black hole in units of the mass of the sun, log base 10, that's 20 orders of magnitude on the horizontal scale. And we've done this for different values of the spectral index n. So 1.4 is this one up here. And so if you follow that one, it goes down, 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 and then followed across, it matches onto this curve over here. So this is the n equal 1.4, which is it's bigger than what COBE or WMAP would tell you. COBE map would tell you it's probably about 1.0, give or take a little bit. This then is the 1.3, 1.2, and all the way down. And you can see that these are all cut off at a particular value of the mass, which is some fraction of the solar mass. And the cutoff, of course, occurs when the universe has expanded so much that there's no longer any possibility for it to pass through a mixed phase. So once the temperature of the universe drops below the critical temperature, there's no longer any mixed phase possible. There's no big incentive for collapse to a black hole, and so there's a very, very sharp cutoff. I'll get to that. It's interesting that these curves, apart from this part here, this these upper curves, that part of it is coming from over densities above pi squared over 12. So those are coming whether or not you have a phase transition. But these regions here, when n is small enough and close enough to 1, those are straight lines on a log-log plot. And in fact, this has a slope of minus 4/3. So the number density is the mass of the black hole to the minus 4/3 power. Excellent approximation. Furthermore, we have a lower cutoff here of 10 to the minus 18 solar masses. Any black hole with a mass less than that would have evaporated by Hawking radiation already. So this is the physically interesting range. You can compare that to first order phase transition, soft one. And it looks pretty much the same. And with PowerPoint, I can go back and forth, and you can see the difference. The first order one, softened one, is slightly fewer black holes, but you know, you've got to have 110 orders of magnitude. A factor of 2 is not going to be very exciting.
Could you clarify this statement about the Hawking radiation? So you're saying that the mass 10 to minus 18, that's the mass which evaporates in the time of several billion years?
Yes, yes. So any, you would not expect to see a primordial black hole with a mass less than 10 to the minus 18 solar masses because it would have evaporated already from radiation. So any mass less than that is not relevant to the present universe, directly. For a second order phase transition, n equal 1.4, 1.3, 1.25, it's the same scale. These curves are all coming from overdensity being above the pi squared over 12. This little peak here is coming from the n equal 1.4. That's coming from that little vestige of a tail. The universe is expanding, and it stops expanding in the mixed phase. So there's a little peak there, but it's down by 50 orders of magnitude compared to the maximum on the left side. And you do a rapid crossover, and it looks about the same, except the peak on the right is a little bit smaller. And you do a fixed speed of sound. No change in the equation of state. Pressure is 1/3 energy density, and it looks like this. So the only difference among those three is that little peak. And that's so small that it's unlikely you would ever observe one of those. Here's the punchline. So now we calculate the contribution to omega today from the production of primordial black holes. So this is the contribution to omega from these, from the different equations of state, as it depends on the spectral index n. For a second order, rapid crossover, fixed speed equations of state, if n is less than about 1.25, it's inconsequential, 10 to the minus 25. Right? You never observe that. If n was a little bit bigger, it would be huge. If n is any smaller, I mean, we don't even get a number out numerically. And this is in total agreement with all the previous calculations that people have done. However, if you go to a first-order equation of state, and you look at values of n between 1.2 and 0.95, you know, obviously the WMAP and COBE data are consistent with something in the range of 1.0 plus or minus something. Contribution to omega is 10 to the 7th. And that's an inconsistency.
What are the units?
One. Omega for the universe is 1. That's a flattened universe.
Right, but 10 to the 7 in units
of 1. That tells you that the calculation is inconsistent. We assume that the formation of primordial black holes was a small perturbation on the evolution of the universe. We do the calculation. We assumed omega is equal to the 1 in the beginning. And at the end, we calculate what's the energy density due to primordial black holes. Right now, it's 10 to the 7th. That's obviously was not a perturbation. And what that means is that you should actually go back and you should take into account these black holes when you calculate the scale factor as it evolves in time. Our calculation for the scale factor assumed that it was in a canonical scenario where you have nucleosynthesis in the usual way and you have recombination and reheating and all those sorts of things. So this is telling you that if you had a first-order phase transition in QCD, the universe would have evolved very, very differently than what people think it has. And it doesn't matter very much what the index n is, as long as it's in that reasonable range. It doesn't matter too much how big the latent heat is. You can decrease the latent heat by a factor of 10. It's not going to change those numbers by more than a factor of 10. So that's a huge effect.
But you need
a mixed phase that persists long compared to the expansion rate when that phase transition occurs, right?
You need a mixed phase which extends for some period of time. Yeah. Exactly how small, you know, we haven't examined that question.
But that certainly happens because the universe expanding very slowly.
But the bubble is expanding
quickly. The system sits in these conditions long enough to travel.
Right. The expansion rate of the universe at the epoch of the QCD phase transition is what, 10 to the minus 6 seconds. Okay, and the microscopic processes are happening at 10 to the minus 22 seconds. So there's plenty of time for everything to thermalize.
But if you imagine the universe can be super cool for some period of time and then suddenly one bubble or a few bubbles appear, then the transition happens very quickly.
It has to super cool. I mean, you cannot have a phase transition exactly as you see. It has to supercool a little bit. And I've done those calculations some years ago. And the amount of supercooling is KOS as well. The amount of supercooling is almost infinitesimal. So that's not going to make much change. Yes?
The other thing I'm concerned about, once this thing reaches its Jeans criterion and starts collapsing during this time when the speed of sound is zero, as soon as its density has risen by a factor of 2 or 3, then the pressure turns back on and
right.
It bounces.
That's a quantitative question. The way
is
we
that included, or do you take the speed of sound based on the
simply on
so
the
you
genes.
Just take the speed of sound to be zero everywhere in the universe regardless of density. But as soon as an overdensity is larger than one, then it's really at a different state in the phase transition than the area around it. And so it can become finite pressure when the area around it is still zero pressure and when it should expand.
Right. That's why we compared with these more numerically intense calculations that actually solve for an overdensity, which is Gaussian or bottom of the wine bottle shape. And those are the ones I mentioned at the beginning of the talk. And they give critical overdensities of about 0.45.
Were those with this equation of state?
They were with a fixed speed equation of state.
Right, but the point is that the fixed speed equation of state isn't a good approximation when your densities are varying by more than a factor of 2.
Right.
Nobody, you said it starts to catastrophically collapse when the density contrast is 1.4.
Right.
But during that collapse, long before it reaches a black hole, it has to go through a density perturbation factors of 2 or 3. And at that point, then that uniform speed of sound approximation breaks down.
Right. So there will be some effect, there'll be some modification, but if we have 7 orders of magnitude.
Well, it completely changes the physics, which is giving you the collapse. It's not just a perturbation.
Well, once this region is overdense, once it's, once you have enough matter within the Schwarzschild radius, then it's over with.
No, but the region is still nowhere near reaching its Schwarzschild radius when it would become pressurized again.
Yeah.
So that seems like a problem.
So I think what that would affect would be the relationship between the mass of the collapsed mass, the mass of the black hole. So it would not be exactly represented by this curve, but it might be some
smaller
number.
No, I think it prevents it from forming the black hole. Because you're having to form a black hole because it's remaining pressureless during the catastrophic collapse.
Right.
And it doesn't.
Once
you're taking its speed of sound to be given by the environment around it instead of its own local equation of state.
That's
form one of those, form those acoustic peaks that they see if the pressure turns back on.
So it depends on how much mass is within the Schwarzschild radius.
Well, I'll wait for the end.
I'm almost done. Okay. Edward asked about what are the observation limits on these things. Well, there is an indication that dark matter is not primordial black holes. But I put a question mark on it. I got this slide from someone else. I put a question mark on it because, maybe there's still a possibility. These are the experimental limits. It's the halo mass fraction percent from 0 to 100% as a function of the mass of the machos. There's no limit. You can have small numbers within 5%, 10%, all the way up to 1/10 of 100 solar masses. But there, at the moment, there's essentially no limit below 10^-7 solar masses. So if you could make these primordial black holes with masses less than 10^-7 solar masses, with the QCD phase transition, you're not far away from that. Most of them do have masses much smaller than 10^-7 small solar masses. You would not really be able to detect them directly because it depends on gravitational lensing. And if the object is too light, it's very difficult to actually use gravitational lensing to detect these things. Quickly make my conclusions. I think not much reason to go into very much detail, but it would seem that if you have a first order phase transition in QCD in the early universe, there's no escaping the fact that you're going to make primordial black holes. We've made an estimate, we've done a survey with different equations of state. The results are not sensitive to the details of the equation of state as long as you do have a mixed phase. It's not sensitive to the exact value for the spectral index and the primordial fluctuations. Even n less than 1 would give you this effect. And if you have any questions, you might ask that one. Thank you.
So to me, what's really striking about that your result on the table, the punchline table, is that for a first order, you get 10^7, and for a crossover, you get 10^-25 or whatever, 0. And if I think about, if I take a first order equation of state, and it has two, it's some curve like this, has two corners.
Yeah.
If I round those corners off at the 1 electron volt scale, then, mathematically speaking, it's now a crossover. But for all practical purposes, the equation of state is still first, is as if it were first order. I just rounded the corners off by 1 electron volt. I have just as long a period of time when the speed of sound is 0. So how could that's mathematically a crossover, and yet it should have the same physics as what you call first order. So why is it not possible to get any number between 0 and 10^7? Why is this? What have you done that makes this stark dichotomy?
Well, we do have a first order phase transition which is rounded at the edges. It's not the Begg model equation of state. It's the other one where you approach the two limits exponentially. And those are a factor of two difference. What we should do is look at the latent heat to get smaller and smaller and smaller, but still non-zero.
But so when you say crossover, what do you mean? If not
a hyperbolic tangent.
But there should be a parameter in that hyperbolic tangent which I could dial and get any number I like between 0 and the maximum.
Okay, so
let me show you. Can get any number.
You should be. All I'm saying is you should be able to get any number between.
These are the ones that we just studied.
Okay, but do you agree that by choice of curve there you could get any number between 0 and 10^7 for your final answer?
In principle, you should be able to, yes, by making this region of latent heat smaller and smaller. But as long as the square of the speed of sound is not 0, that's a big difference.
Well, it's significantly non-zero. What is incident when you take the hyperbolic tangent and make it steeper and steeper, this minimum goes down to 0 and eventually you recover first order. So you have a dial that allows you to continuously.
Well, even the second order one, even the second order one does not go to 0.
So one.
Yeah, I also have a question somewhat related to this. When you are relying on the mixed phase, basically there are two effects, one which just was mentioned by Krishna. The other effect is due to the intrinsic size of the mixed phase, and that is given by the surface tangent. And I think that intrinsic size of the bubbles would kind of come in conflict with the Jeans wave vector. Because one of the effects is basically rounding the corners, the other effect is actually giving the scale. And if that size is, let's say, smaller than the Jeans vector, there might be some problems, or the other way around.
Yeah, well, so what we do is we say you want to fit the diameter of the collapsing region is equal to 1 Jeans wavelength. Okay, so if you're right at the beginning of the transition or right at the end of the transition, where the size of a bubble or droplet is almost equal to the whole region, then that doesn't really apply. So it only applies when you're not too close to one of the two edges.
So, what do you think?